Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 7th of September. The Wisconsin Academy for Graduate Service Dogs began in 1987, and their mission is to promote functional independence and improve quality of life for persons with physical mobility impairments through partnerships with highly skilled service dogs. WAGS, as it is known, has facilitated the partnerships of over 100 service dogs, more than that now, I'm sure, with people with disabilities of movement, such as multiple sclerosis, spinal cord injury, neuromuscular disease, and cerebral palsy. This hour of the program, we're going to be talking about the WAGS program and enter the world of all that dogs can do to help human beings who need their assistance and who make life much easier for people who have disabilities. We have really four guests with us in our studios in Milwaukee. Aaron Backer is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Academy for Graduate Service Dogs, and his dog Ian is also here. Hello, thank you very much, Aaron, for being with us.
Oh, we're both happy to be here.
Oh, and Ian, happy to have you with us. They came all the way from Madison. That was nice. Kathy Rust is also here, a client of WAGS, and her dog Ezra is also with us in the studio. And Kathy is coming to Milwaukee 3 days a week. Is that right?
That was in my previous life.
Oh, in your previous life.
Now I'm at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
Uh-huh.
So no more commuting, but I was happy to come today.
Oh, thank you very much. And what are you doing at UW-Madison?
I'm a researcher.
Uh-huh.
Neuroplasticity research. Very exciting.
Very exciting. And your dog is with us, Ezra.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I'm always astounded when I see what it is dogs can do for human beings to make them more mobile. Can you just give us the wide range of what the dogs you train do, and Kathy, in your case, what your dog specifically does for you?
Well, I can describe the training process. We try to get the dogs prepared for just about anything because the dogs are out in the community, that you can take them to the grocery store, to church, to work every day. So we try to get them prepared for all the things that they're going to deal with out in the community while they're serving someone that has a disability. So that means they're taught to pick up anything that can fit into their mouth and give. They can open doors, push buttons. They help you with your routine in the morning, make sure you get up on time. They can help you, say, for someone who has one of our dogs in a wheelchair. If they fall out of the wheelchair, the dog can help you get back into the wheelchair. And I think one of the most amazing things I've heard come directly from our clients is, while out in the community, one thing they have now that they didn't before is they don't have to ask complete strangers for help. Mm. When they get in trouble or they need some assistance, now the dog can do that for them. So that's just a few of the ways that it helps increase their mobility and their independence in general.
And you started this many years ago. Have you, over the course of 23 years, I think it is now, been able to expand? You've learned that dogs do things that you never even knew they could do, so you've been able to help people with different kinds of disabilities?
Yeah, I mean, literally, we learn from every person that receives one of our dogs because, you know, for Ian, here's a good example. Ian here knows about 60 different commands, but I would try to figure out what he does best and match him to a person that has those specific needs. So Ian's a very strong dog. I would want to make sure he gets placed with someone that has good strength in their arms and their hands, but can be very active and out in the community all the time because Ian wants to be out and doing things all the time. He's not a homebody. So we sort of shape the dog at the end of their training to what the person needs, but we try to utilize the dog's best skills out of, say, 60, you know, as an example.
How does Ezra help you, Kathy?
Well, in the list of conditions that you read earlier for the types of disabilities that the WAGS dogs help with, I have a different kind of condition. I have an unusual connective tissue syndrome called Ehlers-Danlos, and it causes my joints to dislocate very easily. So when I came to WAGS, I said that I would get stuck on the ground and my knee would lock and I couldn't move. And I was hoping that a dog could help me in that situation. So Ezra was trained. All dogs can tug, but he always can bring me his vest, even if he's in the house and he's not working. And in his vest, he has a strap. We put the strap around my ankle. He tugs like any old dog will do. And it tractions my leg enough so that I can snap my fibula back in place when it's dislocated.
Isn't that remarkable?
And he also has a cell phone in his vest. I personally don't have a cell phone. And should he not be able to help me, then the cell phone that he's able to bring me gives me the reassurance that I can get in contact with someone who can help me.
And how does he know to bring you a cell phone?
It's in the vest. So vest, the command vest, he will find it wherever it is in the house and bring it to me.
How long have you had him?
It'll be 3 years in October.
Mm-hmm. And these dogs, the training for these dogs is fairly lengthy, isn't it? A couple of years?
Yeah, the males can sometimes go over 2 years. So it is a lengthy process. And I would point out that all of our dogs are trained by volunteers. So nobody's paid to train our dogs. And so you have this dog for maybe 2 years. Like I said, you take it everywhere with you. It becomes a part of your life. And when you get it to the point where it's ready to be placed, you have to say goodbye and hand it over to someone who really needs the skills that you train that dog. So, but yeah, 2 year process, and you really get bonded to the dog, and it's hard to say goodbye. But it's a culmination of 2 years of hard work that you get to see in action once right. We make the placement. So
I noticed that both of you have retrievers here. That Ezra and Ian are both retrievers. Is that a standard kind of dog that you use, or do you use other breeds?
Well, for WAGS, we tend to use golden retrievers. Probably about 90% of our dogs are goldens, purebreds. We just seem to get the best success using those dogs. But we've successfully trained and placed yellow and black labs as well. And going back into the annals of history, we used to train German shepherds. So we've done a little bit of this, a little bit of that to arrive on the fact that we learned that goldens do the best for us.
Because of their temperaments?
Temperaments, intelligence, they're just about the right size, and they're so friendly. We don't train our dogs to protect. We train our dogs to be friendly and open to strangers because, again, they're out in the community and they meet people, new people all the time, and they have to behave appropriately and welcome people rather than keep them away.
Mm-hmm. And where do you get the dogs?
We have about 3 or 4 different breeders that we use in the state of Wisconsin, very reputable. Most if not all of them are show dog breeders. And then we have a couple volunteers that do some in-house breeding for WAGS and utilize a couple of the breeders that we also use for studs. So mm-hmm. an in-house program, but we also go directly to breeders mm-hmm. that we know and trust.
And Kathy, at what point did you realize that a dog might be of help to you? Did you just hear about this program, or did somebody suggest? Were you a dog lover and you wanted to find out the way to have your dog help you, or what?
I just kind of backed into learning about service dogs. I am an occupational therapist and was working in assistive technology. And I was at an assistive technology conference, and one of my colleagues asked if I would attend the service dog event that was going on because she wanted information for one of her clients. So I went, and it's really sad that in my mind, that Ezra is considered assistive technology, but indeed he is. And I was listening to the presentation, and I was listening to all of the things that service dogs are able to do, and a little light bulb went off in my mind. It said, boy, I could really use a dog like that, a helper like that, a companion like that. Mm-hmm. And so that was the start of about a 2.5 to almost 3 year path for me to get placed with Ezra.
Now, you have to go through training as well, I would assume. What's your training like?
In my instance, because I'm not in a wheelchair, my training was different. We trained for approximately 2 weeks, probably 4 or 5 days a week, and we went out in the community. We were in my house. I'd never had a dog before. I had to learn how to brush my dog's teeth.
Oh, my gosh.
How to clean his ears, all kinds of daily maintenance. And I remember my trainer handed me a brush to brush this dog, and she just kind of went, I can tell you've never brushed a dog before. So it was a very, very interesting couple of weeks and a lot to learn.
You had never had a dog before. Isn't that something? And you took on your dog.
Well, he's certainly been worth it. He's just, I consider him my silver lining.
I would imagine you do. You talked about the commands. What are some of the commands? 60 commands. That's a lot, I would imagine.
Yeah, you know, the basic ones, sit, down, heel. But, you know, like Kathy said, vest is the command for her dog to bring her vest. Take, go find, you know, a lot of those types of things. Nose it is how they push buttons, maybe for an elevator or an automatic door. So, you know. Some are really simple that you train your pet dog, and others get a little more complicated. We combine three commands in one. For example, if we want, Ian here can go to the dryer, open the door, pull clothes out, and then tug over the basket to me. So that's three different commands in one, which would be probably pretty difficult for a pet. But for a dog that's been through 2 years of training and practice and practice and practice, he got it pretty easily.
Right. Isn't that amazing? They can do that.
They are amazing. They're so smart. But, you know, like you said, it takes a good temperament, too. And you want to have a dog that wants to work, not just lie around all day. So, mm-hmm. Again, it's one of the reasons why we use Goldens, because they're perfectly suited for this kind of work.
Yeah. And they want to work. Most dogs, I guess, want to work, don't they?
I think so. Yeah. All the dogs I've worked with at WAGS seem to want to work. We sometimes get a lazy dog, but then what you do is you just go find the thing that they love more than anything in life. That could be string cheese or hot dogs. and then you just start training with that. And, you know, soon they learn that working is not so bad anymore. You know, they get a delicious treat. So that's how we get around that little problem.
Right. Yeah. And why does it take 2 years?
Well, we get the dogs when they're 8 weeks old. Oh. So they're just puppies. We like to get them that young because their brains are growing. Their brain development is, you know, very high. They learn most of their commands by the time they're 6 months old. Then you have to get through the adolescent period. These Goldens are very active. They can get very excitable. So you're working a lot on just making sure that they're calm enough to be out in the community and do this kind of work. By the time they're 2 years old, they've learned all their commands. They've calmed down a little bit, and that's usually when they're ready to go. So that's why it takes so long. Some of it's a waiting period, mm-hmm. getting them over their adolescence.
Right. And can you take Ezra anywhere?
Yes. Ezra has traveled on airplanes to the East Coast and the West Coast. He goes to work with me every day. We're really 24/7 together. There are a few places I choose not to take him if I'm going to be with other people, so I know that I'm obviously safe. If it's a really crowded environment, then I'll choose to leave him home for brief periods of time.
Mm-hmm. And what about people around you? People always wonder when they see service dogs, because my immediate instinct is to take your dogs and put them in my lap right now and let them share the microphone with me, which I assume would not be the appropriate thing to do. But people never know exactly. Should you? People ask you, is it okay if I pay attention to your dog? Or I think the general public probably needs some information.
I've been very pleased by the way children do not approach my dog. I hear them say to their parents, Mommy, that's a working dog. That's a working dog. So at least in the Madison area where I live and where WAGS has a very strong presence, children are very aware of working dogs and really are very respectful of the fact that the dog is working. I tend to have the most problem with adults.
I understand.
And the other thing that I am constantly running into is people think I'm training my dog, because at this time I'm not using a cane, and so I don't look terribly disabled, but I have a hidden disability. And so I think it confuses people that I have a working dog. And so if I'm not in a hurry, I like to talk a little bit about hidden disabilities, and I like to talk about service dog etiquette. And I explain that mobility assist service dogs are very different than vision assist service dogs. You really don't want to interrupt an individual who's working with their dog that is their vision assist. But the correct thing is to always ask, and Ezra loves to visit, so that's one of the words that he knows, but he has to wait until he gets the command.
Hmm. Do you want to add anything to that, Aaron?
Yeah, the rule of thumb is just to ask. But I also, when I'm out and about, children always look to their parent and ask if it's okay to pet them. Or I'll hear parents say, now that's a working dog. You have to ask, or, you know, they just walk right by. So, you know, the rule of thumb is ask when I'm out. If you ask me, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to say, of course. I don't want to withhold him from anybody. You know, sometimes people see Ian, and I can see them visually shaking, wanting to pet him so badly. And, you know, I certainly want to give them
the
full experience. Yeah. So
right.
If I'm working on something with him, say in the grocery store, I'm going to say, no, I'm working with him right now, but catch me in 5 minutes. So, and usually it works just fine.
Uh-huh.
And the dogs need to meet people and get petted by strangers and know that kids are different than adults when it comes to playing and touching and things like that. So it's part of their socialization, part of their training.
And do they have work hours? Is there like a 9-to-5 thing going on with dogs? Are there, and how do they know when? I would imagine they have to have off time when they're not working, right? Do you give them so many hours a day? And how would they know the difference between, okay, it's non-work time and now it's work time?
Well, I can only answer that from my perspective with Ezra. And Ezra really does know when he's got his vest on that he's working, and when his vest is off, he's not working. But even in our home, he will get me items. He'll pick items up for me, but he doesn't have his vest on in the house. So it's kind of a fine line there as to whether he's working or not at home. But when he has his vest on, he knows that he has to be on his game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I always say that our dogs are on call 24 hours a day,
mm-hmm.
and it's our responsibility to make sure that they get that exercise time, that play time. And usually it means putting on the vest or taking off the vest, and that's the difference between working and it's okay to play or lounge around. So, but, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning, the person may need something, and the dog is expected to, on command, go do whatever it is that they ask. So they are on call 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I certainly give Ian at least 5 walks a day. We go to the dog park and exercise because they need that. We don't want them to become overweight. We want them to be healthy. And we want them to work as long as possible for the person, and hopefully that's 10 years or more.
Oh, really?
That's only going to happen if they stay healthy.
Yeah, that's a pretty long period of time. Can you treat them? Some of us get carried away with our dogs, and they sleep in beds with us, and we talk to them and, you know, let them on couches and treat them probably nightly. Like they aren't dogs, which isn't an entirely good thing. But you need to have a different relationship with your dog. Can you do those kinds of things with a service dog?
Certainly. Ezra will never get on a bed or a couch without being invited.
Huh.
And interestingly enough, throughout the summer, even though he was invited up on the bed, he wouldn't stay. It was just too warm. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But he knows when it's appropriate to do things, and he knows what he's allowed to do without permission and what he has to wait for permission to participate in.
Hmm. It must astound both of you what these animals can do, doesn't it? When you think about it, these are extraordinary things. There's a bond there that's...
Yeah,
wonderful.
You know, we've talked a lot about the very practical things that these dogs can do to help people, but the other part of the equation is the companionship.
Mm-hmm.
They're such loving, wonderful. And I thought about this as you talked about getting on the bed. Well, many of our clients that get our dogs sleep in the same bed with the dog. I mean, they're that close. They've bonded where, you know, they feel out of sorts if the dog is on the floor. And we certainly encourage that. We want them to be as close to their dog as possible because they're going to give them a lot of loving companionship and in that way make their lives more fulfilled. Not just the practical stuff that they can do, but also just that companionship and the love that they get from them makes a huge difference.
Right. We're going to welcome phone calls for our guests. And here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, for you to join our conversation. We're talking with 4 guests, actually, although the dogs are not speaking, but they're here. Aaron Backer is with us. He is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Academy for Graduate Service Dogs, WAGS, and his dog Ian is with us. Kathy Rust is an occupational therapist, and she is a client of WAGS, and her dog Ezra is also here. Here's our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And if you would like to send an email, you can do that at talk@wpr.org. The program WAGS is 23 years old now, and they've been serving people with physical disabilities, helping them achieve higher levels of independence through partnerships with very skilled dogs. To your calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We welcome your phone calls, 800-486-8655. Jack is next. We should tell you, too, that Rhonda is in here taking pictures, too. So if you want to see these remarkable creatures, they will be on our Facebook page after the show is over. So that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. You got to see them. They're gorgeous. Jack in Waukesha. Hi.
Yeah. I just wanted to call in. I was listening and wanted to, those service dogs do a lot of good for a lot of people, especially with disabilities. But there's another facet that those dogs do good, too. And I was a canine handler in Vietnam.
Mm.
And let me tell you, those dogs save thousands and thousands of lives with the way they used to alert on ambushes and booby traps and everything. So it's just another thing that that dogs are really good at doing.
And you trained them, Jack?
Excuse me?
Did you train the dogs?
No, they were trained. You worked with them and you worked in training, and then you you worked with different companies. There was either scout dogs or there was sentry dogs, and I was a scout dog handler.
Aaron, you want to respond?
Yeah, I'm also thinking all the different things that dogs do. There's so many things. We talked about guide dogs who help people that are visually impaired. There's police dogs. They sometimes get forgotten, but they're highly trained dogs that do a lot of great work. There's dogs that are hearing dogs, dogs that anticipate epileptic attacks. There's dogs that assist after an epileptic attack. There's lots of dogs working with children that have autism now and doing some wonderful things. So it seems like there's no limit to what these dogs can do. But a lot of it goes back to that companionship and the relationship that you forge with the dog. And when they're happy, they're willing to do a lot for you. And so, yeah, and like we said,
you forge a lot of relationships when you're in the jungles. And they also use them over in Afghanistan, too, for mines and booby traps, things like that over there. But they save a lot of lives. Hmm. So just a comment.
Thank you. A worthwhile comment. Thanks very much for your call. Bye. We go next to Camille in Frankfort, Michigan. Hi, Camille.
Hi.
Hi.
What I wanted to ask is, does the amount of time that you have to spend taking care of the dog any more than a responsible pet owner would have to spend taking care of their dog? And if so, is it difficult to get in a day, everything you have to do?
Well, I'll respond to that. And there's a lot of care, yes, involved with having a service dog, because when these dogs are out in public, they're supposed to be unobtrusive, which means they can't smell. That means their teeth have to be brushed. They have to be clean. Their ears have to be clean. And they need to be properly groomed. I know several individuals through WAGS who have dogs, and they frequently have individuals who help them groom their dogs and people who help them walk their dogs and exercise their dogs. I'm fortunate to be able to manage those situations myself, but I have a walk-in shower with a chair, so Ezra can come in there and get a bath, and I can sit down, and he gets cleaned up pretty easily.
Do you want to respond to that?
Well, you know, the only thing I would add to that is WAGs. Always make sure ahead of time that you can take care of the dog that you get, or that you have sufficient resources, people helping you that will be able to take care of the dog, because we can provide things like volunteer walkers or runners to help your dog get your exercise in. We have groomers in Madison that help out with the cost of grooming the dog for our clients and things like that. But we won't place a dog that is not going to be taken care of, is not going to be taken to the vet, make sure they get their regular checkups, because, you know, we really care about these dogs, and we don't want them to be in unsafe situations or not be taken care of. And we certainly don't want them to turn into glorified pets. Mm-hmm. We want them to work what they were trained to do and help the person. Mm-hmm. So.
And they're trained in volunteers' homes. Is that right?
That's right, yes. That's how we keep our costs down. It's still, with even using volunteer resources to do 90% of the training, it still costs between $12,000 and $15,000 for one of our dogs. So it's a huge investment.
Yes.
For one person over a 10-year period. And part of how we keep the cost down is utilizing volunteers. But having volunteers part and parcel of WAGs is really a wonderful thing. It gets the community involved. It's people helping other people. And it's really a unique volunteer situation. We give them more responsibility than probably any other charitable organization in the state of Wisconsin. You think about volunteers dropping in and out of maybe a crisis center once or twice a week. Well, you have these dogs every day for 2 years, taking them to work, caring for them, making sure that they're up to their standards for training. It's a huge responsibility. And we don't have a lot of volunteers. We certainly need more. This isn't something for everybody, but everyone I've met that has done it has loved it, and thinks it's a great thing to what they're doing to help people.
Yeah, let's thank you very much, Camille, for your call. We go to Kay in Madison. Hi, Kay.
Hi, I'm interested in knowing more about the use of service dogs for psychological support, like for people with severe depression. And I'm reading about that more often than I used to. And can you make any comments about that?
Well, the first thing I would say is normally those dogs are categorized as companion animals. They unfortunately are not covered under the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990, so they don't have public access. So that can create some problems for someone who would like to have the dog with them 24 hours a day as they go to work or out in the community. So at this point, those dogs are classified as companion animals, so they can do their work in the home, or wherever they're invited. So maybe if they go to the doctor's office quite frequently, they can ask to bring their companion dog. But I, beyond that, I can't say much more. I've never trained that type of assistance dog. But I know more, you know, we get calls all the time, more and more people looking for that type of dog to help with things like depression. And I mentioned autism dogs earlier. Sometimes they are full-service dogs that have public access, but more often they're companion animals, and they have to be invited in the school, which is typically not going to happen. So mm-hmm. We've still got some work to do getting that done where companion animals will have more public access.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Kay, for your call. We go to Dave in Green Bay next. Hi, Dave.
Hi, guys. I got a question on what do you guys do with the dogs that don't make the cut?
Well, they go to a very lucky family who purchases them, and they get a very well-trained dog. But, again, we look for the right type of family because we have placed our release dogs with families that have a child with autism, and it's a very good fit. Mm. And we'll do that rather than just sell the dog to a family that really, really wants a wonderful dog. But that happens sometimes where the dog has some issues. You know, dog-dog interaction, they may be not so good at that. growl in public, or just have some other issues. And we find the right family to take this dog and love it for the rest of their lives. And it's about $800 we get when we place a dog like that. We also have not all dogs become full-service dogs. Some of them become home helpmates, and that's a dog that just assists in the home. Many times senior citizens would like that type of dog, so we'll place them. They don't have public access. And then we also sell our dogs to people that will use them as therapy dogs, going to nursing homes and hospitals and things like that. So a lot of times a dog still gets utilized in some way, just maybe not what you would think of a typical service dog.
Mm-hmm. those bringing dogs to nursing homes is a wonderful thing. I've just seen wonders happen in nursing homes when there are dogs there.
Yeah, I take Ian. I try at least once a week to go somewhere with him, and usually I do it when I'm feeling down because people's faces just light up, and it's a wonderful experience. And Ian loves it. He loves getting to jump up on a hospital bed.
Oh, Ian.
Have a little fun, jump down, and get petted. So.
Oh, why not? That's just so good. It's just so much good. Is there? Did you have to wait for a while to get a dog? Is there a waiting list? I would think there would be.
Yes, I think I waited a little over 2 years for Ezra. But I think Aaron can speak to the kind of wait list that they have at WAGS.
Yeah, we don't necessarily have a first-come, first-served kind of list. Again, we have a certain dog that's ready to graduate with these top skills, and then we try to match them with a person who's waiting on our list that needs them. The typical wait is about 2 years. We wish it were shorter. The problem we have, again, is we don't have enough volunteers training the dogs. If we had more volunteers training the dogs, we could do that. We have about twice as many people waiting than dogs being trained. So maybe about 10 being trained right now, 20 people waiting.
Mm-hmm.
And not every dog makes it, so it's not even 1 to 2. It's a little worse than that. But that's what we're working on right now. Our program is in a very good place right now, so we want to get more volunteers. We're out trying to get them from Madison, the Dane County area, but we're looking for people in Milwaukee, Janesville, and the Rock County area as well.
But the program operates in Madison, Aaron?
It does. That's where our training facility is.
Okay.
Most of our client applications come from Madison, but we do serve all of Dane County, and we try to serve Milwaukee and Rock Counties when we can.
Mm-hmm. So you need volunteers?
Absolutely.
All right. So how do they find out about volunteering?
Well, if I can put in a pitch for volunteers, every once in a while I run into somebody who says, oh, I really thought I want to be a puppy raiser. I'd really like to do that. And I tell them wholeheartedly that, you know, if you're a person that can give love and attention to a dog and then part with it, you're just giving an amazing gift to an individual like myself. So I really encourage people. And if they're not in the right place in their lives at this point in time, they're going to be needed down the road in another year or two or whatever. So if there's anyone listening out there that's thinking about it, thank you.
Where should they call?
They can call our Madison training facility. It's 608-250-9247. And our application is on the WAGS website, WAGS, WAGS.net, N-E-T.
WAGS.net, and you'll also see pictures of the dogs.
Yes, and you'll fall in love and get ready to get started.
How true, you'll fall in love. Here's our phone number if you'd like to join the conversation. You can also send an email, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And if you would like to send an email, it's talk@wpr.org. Paul is next from Duluth. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, and boy, what a wonderful show. A couple of calls ago, a lady called about dogs for people with depression. I was diagnosed with major depression about 17 years ago, and I actually had to quit working. And the doctor I was seeing at the time told me, because I was becoming very introverted and reclusive, and he said, you know, Paul, if I could prescribe a dog to you, I would. And I thought about it for about 2 months. I wasn't sure if I was ready to have a dog. And then I went to the animal shelter and I got the most beautiful chow. She was about a year old and she was a handful. I had to train her and everything else. And it gave me a purpose in life. And she is now almost 17 years old.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm afraid I'm going to lose her pretty soon because she's starting to fail. But she's still the joy of my life and the best thing that ever happened to me.
So Paul.
That's just for that lady you called earlier. I would recommend that to anybody that is able to, you know, rescue a dog and enjoy the living daylights out of it.
Kathy.
Well, I do have a comment. In addition to the pain syndrome, connective tissue syndrome I have, I've also had depression and have been on antidepressant medications most of my adult life. And yes, indeed, dogs can be wonderful, and Ezra's helped me immeasurably with mental health issues as well. But I'd just like to bring up the fact that dogs do need care. And when you're really depressed and you can't get yourself out of bed, mm-hmm. You have to think about who's going to take that dog out so that dog can be outside, who's going to give that dog exercise. And those can be really, really sometimes insurmountable problems for people who are in an acute depressive episode. So just have to keep that in mind as well.
Mm-hmm. Are you still with us, Paul?
Yeah, my situation was more chronic than acute.
Oh.
I had always been very active in my work and athletic and everything else, and I knew what was going on. So my situation was not quite so acute, but it is chronic, and it still exists.
So you're able, though, to take care of your joy?
Oh, I had to train my Cassie. I mean, she was, like I say, she was hell on wheels when I got her. Whoever had her before hadn't really, she was housebroken, but that was about it.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't leash trained. It took time, but it gave me a challenge, and that's what I needed.
Thank you so much for calling.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye. We'll take more phone calls in a moment if you'd like to join our conversation. Our guests are with the Wisconsin Academy for Graduate Service Dogs, and we have two of the two dog graduates with us in our studio as well. Kathy Rust is a client of WAGS. Her dog Ezra has been looking at her adoringly for this hour, and Aaron Backer is also here, executive director of the Wisconsin Academy for Graduate Service Dogs. His dog Ian, gorgeous animal, is with us in studio as well. Here's the number for you to join our conversation. They are always looking for volunteers. They don't have enough volunteers. So if you are crazy about dogs and you're looking for a rigorous volunteer opportunity that will mean the world of difference to people, you may want to consider being a volunteer. Here's our phone number for you to join this conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow on our program, during this hour, we'll be speaking with the author of The Warmth of Other Suns, the epic story of America's great migration. This looks at, it's a chronicling of one of the great untold stories of American history, the decades-long migration of black citizens who fled the South for northern and western cities in this country in search for a better life. The author of the piece will be with us. It's also I believe the 70th anniversary of the London Blitz, and there was news yesterday that there is now rare color film of Winston Churchill and of bomb damage that was inflicted on London during World War II. It has serviced on. It is the 70th anniversary of the Blitz. We will be speaking with the author of Citizens of London, the Americans who stood with Britain in its darkest, finest hour, which is also a heck of a book. Lynn Olson will be joining us. All right, back to your phone calls. And if you'd like to join us by email, that would be fine. The number is 800-486-8655. And the email address is talk@wpr.org. Virginia from Milwaukee is next. Hi, Virginia.
Oh, good morning, Kathleen. And good morning to your fine guests and their little doggies there. I'm sorry, I can't see them. I work with dogs, too, but I make them a very special food. And what I'm calling about this morning is that I recently gave a talk at Toastmasters concerning how therapy dogs help Alzheimer's patients. And I actually worked in homes with people with Alzheimer's, and a few of these people had dogs themselves. They had raised lovely show dogs. And I saw the way the woman who had Alzheimer's, early Alzheimer's, I saw the way that she reacted to her dog when her husband could not calm her down. And I put that into my talk. And actually, I had a little stuffed dog there, and I actually won the day that day because it was the best talk. And I learned a lot in giving that talk just by reading and doing the research on it, and also having my own background with working with Alzheimer's patients in their homes. I also have a friend in Waukesha who has a couple of service dogs because she has a problem getting up with her knees. And so I go out there and walk her dogs. So I don't have it. Never had a dog myself, but I've had a lot of experience with them. And I'm learning more and more, and I'm just so glad that we can call in and give comments on all of the programs here, Kathleen. So just really glad to hear what folks have to say. And I would love to be a volunteer, but I guess I'm doing enough already.
Okay, Virginia.
Thanks. You so much.
Thanks very much for the call. Yeah. Volunteers, too. Let's talk a little bit more about this, because there are heavy-duty volunteers needed for training dogs. What about, let's talk more about walking dogs, because it seems to me as though maybe a school classroom could take on a project of adopting a dog and walking a dog, the teacher in the class at some time of day. Are there, or maybe not, is there a need for that for people who just can't give the kind of exercise that you've described?
Well, I get calls all the time from people that have unique skills or creative ways to help the organization. And if it works, I'll do it, because people really want to get involved with our organization. And maybe they can't give the time and resources to train one of our dogs, but they want to do something. And I take Ian and another dog I was training before him into classrooms. Many times kids come up with these great ideas for fundraising and help the organization out that way. Penny wars and other things have been done for us. So there's certainly, I'm open to a lot of different things. And, not everybody can do this work. And so people want to get involved, and I'm open to ideas.
Uh-huh. Good.
I personally will be accessing WAGS volunteers about 6 weeks, because I'm going to be having surgery, and so I'm not going to be mobile for quite some time. And so I got in touch with Aaron, and he's going to find me some dog walkers to help out. The other time that I may access WAGS volunteers is if I travel out of the country. I don't want to go into what might happen, trying to take a dog on a transatlantic flight and crossing borders and all of that. So when I'm traveling in a situation like that, I'm always with people. So the need to have my dog isn't paramount, but dog sitting is another volunteer opportunity. And usually, they have people who are trained and they understand all your dog's commands and the responsibilities your dog has. So I will be checking in with Aaron about getting a dog sitter next January.
Mm-hmm. And will your dog have a special set of new needs, that new commands that he'll have to learn to be able to care for you, or the care for you be greater than it is now after the surgery?
Well, Ezra's really extremely attentive to me no matter what. So I really don't see that it's going to be very different.
I see.
He picks things up from me. I don't need him to pick things up for me at this point in time. Physically, I'm doing well enough. But this will be a time when I will need him to do that. So he'll be able to do the kinds of things that he always does. He'll just be working a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to add about dog sitting. Many times our volunteer trainers need a break, or they go on vacation, and so that's when we would utilize our sitters as well. So there's that. If you don't want a dog in your house all the time but can give up a weekend or a week here and there to just take care of our dogs, our sitters don't have to do any training with the dogs. It's kind of a break for them. But especially families with small children really like that volunteer opportunity, because they get to see a dog for a little bit and not be totally responsible for
exactly.
it.
Exactly. I noticed that both of you are doing hand commands with your dogs right now. Is that the way you train? Do you do voice commands as well?
Well, some of our clients don't speak very clearly, and so it would be advantageous for them to learn some hand signals. And again, we try to teach our dogs just about everything. And so I've taught Ian about 6 or 7 different hand signals, but you are a little bit limited with what you can do with that versus voice commands. Because with our volunteer trainers, they've been giving them voice commands for 2 years. It's hard to switch just to hand signals, but a combination of both usually works well.
Mm-hmm. And do you use Ian to go all kinds of places? Is he a visiting dog? How do you describe?
Well, he's technically still in training, and while he's still in training, I do try to utilize him as a therapy dog. The nice thing about WAGS is we have such a good reputation in our community that they let us come into hospitals and nursing homes without any type of certification or anything, because they know that our dogs are well trained and that they know that their residents or the people staying in the hospitals will really have a nice time with them. So, you know, why not? And we certainly encourage all our volunteers to do the same thing while they're training their dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. And do you ever run short of breeders here? Are you going to need to go beyond Wisconsin to find breeders for
them? We've gone into Michigan and we've gone into Illinois a little bit because we have great breeders, but they don't always have the right puppy for us. And for them, it's a business. They're selling their dogs to individuals and other groups as well. And, of course, we always want the top dog, the pick of the litter, and we can't always have it. So, sometimes we scramble around. If we get a couple new volunteers, we want to get them a puppy right away. So we do have a little trouble finding puppies sometimes. It's about timing and when they're ready and who's available to take them. So it's a delicate balance.
And what does the pick of the litter mean for you?
Typically, that's the dog that already has a really nice temperament. You can put the puppy on its back and it's not going to cry or struggle. It's not going to be afraid of loud noises. It's going to be interested in a new environment rather than trying to run back to the litter. Usually for us and the breeder, that means the same puppy is the pick of the litter and the one we want. So you can already tell about 7 or 8 weeks which one might be the best show dog and or the best service dog. And so they can get more money for that puppy than some of the other ones in the litter.
And Kathy, were you involved in the process of getting your dog, or was this dog chosen for Kathy for a certain reason, certain temperament? Kathy had a similar temperament, or how did that happen?
Well, Aaron can expand on this, but no, WAGS found me the dog that would meet my needs. And I'm assuming they still do this, but at the time that Ezra was placed with me, my friends, workers, doctors filled out a personality profile on me, as did all of the puppy trainers who'd worked with Ezra. And they did use the results of those, I think their personality-based tests, to make sure that Ezra and I would be a good fit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we go to great lengths to make sure that the relationship is going to be a good one. And some of it is that advanced planning. But we always have the person meet the dog before placement, because that one-on-one meeting tells us a lot as well. And if all things go well and those tests and the personality of the dog and the person seem to match up well, we have a good placement.
Yeah.
And then when you come to WAGS and get one of our dogs, the relationship is for the life of the dog. So, you know, if Kathy did need some additional training for a new condition or something, we would help her with that. It doesn't seem like she needs it, but she could turn to us if she needed us.
Mm-hmm. And what about buying the dogs? This is an operation. You have a lot of volunteers, but I would think that you need to do fundraising to purchase the dogs, don't you?
Yeah, our dogs can be between $2,000 and $3,000 just for the puppy fee. Then you're looking at the vet costs for the organization. We try not to have the volunteers pay for very much out of pocket. They may pay for their food and toys that they want them to have, but we cover everything else. So when we sell a full-service dog, we try to recoup about half the cost. So a service dog is $6,000. A home helpmate is $2,000. A therapy dog is $1,500. But we've never turned anyone away because of their inability to pay. And most people that get our dogs can't afford $6,000. So
right. We
do some very creative things. We have a fund set aside. If you raise a little bit of money, we'll match it and things like that. So nobody can afford our dogs to get them, so we always help them fundraise and give them a little bit of money.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It is remarkable that you'll have that kind of relationship for 10 years with your dog who will help you for 10 years. Isn't that wonderful?
It is. And I think the whole first year that I had Ezra, I would all the time be saying, I can't believe I have a dog. I can't believe I have a dog. And he is just a wonderful dog. He's a happy dog. And when you have a lot of pain syndrome issues, it's really wonderful to have a dog that's smiling. And Ezra will actually go straight up off the ground when you give him the command, happy. I shouldn't say it too loud here. But yes, you know, I'm really so excited about having him in my life, and it's going to be a long time. And I actually know another client from WAGS who actually has her second WAGS dog right now. So her first dog had to retire, and he went to a very wonderful home, and she still goes and visits him. Mm-hmm. But she now has her second WAGS dog. So even the retired dogs are in loving, wonderful places as well.
Yeah, I'm sure there's always a home for them, a welcoming people for them. Just give us more information again, where the website is, what the phone number is. And
yeah, the phone number is 608-250-9247.
Okay.
Our website is wags.net.
Okay.
If you go to our website, you'll see a lot of great information if you want to get started on volunteering, but also if you are thinking about getting one of our dogs. There's lots of information about how you go about doing that, but also what the dog can do for you, stories of people that have their dogs already, their stories from volunteers, what they get out of the experience. So going to our website is nice because you get a lot of information. Then give us a call if you have any questions or want to get started.
Thank you very much for coming to visit us. Thank your dogs for coming to visit us as well.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Have you here. Thank you. Our guests, the WAGS program is based in Madison. It's the Wisconsin Academy for Graduate Service Dogs. And we thank Kathy Rust, who's a client of WAGS, her dog Ezra, for being with us. And we also thank Aaron Backer and his dog Ian. Aaron is the executive director of the Wisconsin Academy for Graduate Service Dogs. We also have pictures of the dogs and of Aaron and Kathy on our Facebook page, so if you would like to go to that, feel free to do so, and you can fall in love with these animals as well. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show, and there we are on Facebook. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this spectacular show, and thanks to Chrissy Pease for answering phone calls. We're all now going to love the dogs for a little while before we let them leave for Madison. Great conversations ahead. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be with you again tomorrow at 9 o'clock.